Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you in. It's Wednesday. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, the Pride of Chicago, Danny Burke, and you. Excited tonight. Basketball, little ACC Big Ten Challenge. That gets rocking. We'll talk some Husker hoops. Plenty of coaching carousel and silly season and the latest and greatest Tennessee fumble. Or let's just say they had a bad play call inside the red zone. Okay, we'll get into all what's going on with coaching, some Scott Frost thoughts, and a lot of you and me can join us this afternoon if you like, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can tap the line, Chillingbridge, Cork, and Tap House. We'll get into the college football playoff rankings, Clemson in there. Obviously, Auburn's the new greatest thing because they beat Alabama. They are two. You have OU at three, Wisconsin in at number four. So we'll get Brad Edwards, his thoughts on that in 1 hour. We'll run down Jake Mielheisen, former Husker standout, to set the stage for not only Boston College tonight, but the next five games for Nebraska basketball. Schedule kind of cranks up. We'll determine how real you are as a program here in this Big Ten race. Excited. Dean Blevin's going to be with us in 15 minutes as well. Get his take on Gundy and his mullet taking a lunch meeting with Tennessee, Arkansas, A&M, Jimbo, Big 12 title, so we'll hit the world of college football. You were worried about one more suitor, weren't you, as a Nebraska fan? Or at this point right now, as you wait for Saturday and the completion of the AAC championship, are you kind of in all good cruise mode? It's like that last group of finals you took. As you get close to graduation, you either know going in, what's up, I'm going to have to retake this SOB, or it's good, I'm going to finally get my diploma. Pull the old Tommy boy. 7 years, not a doctor. 4 years is what it's supposed to be. Listen, I look at Nebraska right now and just how little noise there is. What noise is out there? Well, you might be hearing some more things about culture and the type of program Riley ran. And, I mean, stuff like that. That's what's floating out there. You're probably hearing some numbers on assistants and the assistant pool that the next head coach will get at Nebraska. You're beyond the numbers that Frost is supposed to get when he leaves. And there is one more big thorn that could screw things up for Scott Frost in his return to Nebraska, and that is Oregon. It's just kind of been out there and looming, and Uncle Phil and Scott's love with Oregon. And what's happened now? Well, things are heating up with Jimbo Fisher. Things are in action, and we'll get Dean Blevin's thoughts on that in 15 minutes. You have Jimbo Fisher. You have Texas A&M. You have printable money that's their own currency, and it spends everywhere down at A&M. And you just want to get the hell out of Tallahassee, apparently, if you're Jimbo Fisher. Maybe you're just sick of being there, and you feel underappreciated. So if that comes open, there's a beeline to Willie Taggart, who's now at Oregon. And really the last domino to fall was what's Oregon going to do if they're in a situation where they need to replace Willie Taggart. One more domino, one last bullet for that zombie chasing you. Make sure the bad guy's dead at the end of the movie that could screw this thing up. And Football Scoop reporting that Oregon has extended or offered to extend Willie Taggart's contract 4 years, I think $4 million. and that's out there. They've been proactive with their sitting head coach right now, expecting Florida State to come calling if Jimbo leaves for A&M. Scott Frost, mentioned by footballscoop.com, also the same place that reported that T.O. made a phone call to him that didn't happen, saying that Scott Frost is not an option at Oregon. One more last domino, one more last hurdle that could maybe screw this thing up. And you've had this line of events with Frost. It's been, well, does he want to leave Central Florida? And then you've had the smoke with Florida. You've had the offer from Florida. You had the decline by Frost to really get into any sort of negotiation. And I just said offer. I didn't mean offer, but you had interest from Florida. So now it's Nebraska, it's UCF, and is Oregon out there waiting for a last-second Hail Mary, and now they've been shut down. Again, according to footballscoop.com, not even going to jack with or pursue Scott Frost because it's so late in the game, and it spells what? Spells that come Saturday or Sunday, Saturday night, Sunday morning, you'll know who your next head coach at Nebraska is. And he used to wear number 7, and he was great at running the option, and he was a tough quarterback. You can kind of rest a bit easier now, I think, if you're a Nebraska fan, with some of this news, depending on what you believe, right? With Oregon and Nebraska and Scott Frost. I look at it as the absolute cinching of this, anything except the official word, okay? It's there. So that is some good news for Nebraska with whether or not this Oregon job comes open, whether Taggart leaves, the fact that Scott Frost is not part of this. The other thing that kind of puts a nail in this, will Scott Frost come to Lincoln or not, is where Central Florida is at in the world of college football. And if you had a wonderment of if they could get some momentum, if there was somebody in that selection committee with the college football playoff last night, if you're wondering if maybe Central Florida makes a jump up the board, they are one of a couple teams now undefeated. It's just Wisconsin and Central Florida now. Don't bother. They come in at number 14. It's not anything they've done. They're good. I'd love to see them hook up for just the hell of it with somebody from the SEC. I'd like to see him play Wisconsin. I'd like to see what they do to the Pac-12. I'd love to see it. Are there players on that same level? Or is it the level of competition they're facing? And I think South Florida is good. I think Houston's good. I think Memphis is good. I mean, Memphis beat UCLA, and we know what happened. UCLA's now got Chip Kelly. I think the AAC's a really good G5's conference. It's probably the best. I know some Mountain West folks would start unloading on me, but I just look what you got here. And what you have is Central Florida still at 14. Still at number 14. They're undefeated. They're winning by almost 5 touchdowns a game. And the man that's their leader, how's he composing himself? And he's doing what you may do or want to do, or probably have done. I've driven around town. I still see some Central Florida flags hanging because you switch teams halfway through the year. Yeah, Danny White trying to be proactive, getting on Twitter, but losing his mind last night. You got to be kidding me. All this work, they're very sexy right now. They are really probably pretty good. And still number 14. Yeah, you move up a whole whopping one spot with all the chaos that's going on, with all the teams like Miami, like Clemson, just to name a couple, that have lost to sub-500 teams. Washington State, we love them. They've got a bad loss in Cal. Iowa drilled Ohio State. Everyone's vulnerable in college football, yet someone's undefeated, and working teams that on a given Saturday could roll into a Power 5 stadium and win. And I put Central Florida in that group. Well, Oregon's out of it, and Central Florida moved up one spot. New Year's Day, six on the line. Championship game, AAC Saturday against Memphis. And the best you're going to do is get probably the runner-up of the SEC Championship, really the third-place team, because it's going to be Auburn or Georgia, with the loser of that, because Alabama's going to get a jump somewhere. Alabama could stay in the thick of this. We'll get into that with Brad Edwards, whether or not Bama's actually dead. So you have a consolation prize of being undefeated, of being respected, and now losing your coach eventually. That's how it's mapping out. That's how you feel. And this is not a new phenomena. It's Houston, who they ended up losing a game, but still weren't getting much love or consideration. How many years did Boise live in bowl game purgatory? Forever. I mean, they had their moment. They had their moment in the sun where they trick played OU to death, and it was great. But they've never, ever been able to go from the kids' table to the adult table. And that is another realization that if you stay at Central Florida, you'll never ever. That's like the greatest challenge. Can you hijack a Group of Five squad and get invited to a college football playoff? How do you do that? Well, you keep beating teams 40-17, which could happen if Scott Frost stays there. You keep recruiting elite talent out of Florida, and then you get a date with Florida State, Florida, or Miami. They won't do it. Florida State tried to get out of their game against South Florida last year. Nothing was a score fest, 65-35. Didn't look great for South Florida, but they did okay. You're not going to get a non-conference game. You could do the tour like BYU's done. Go play half the Big Ten. Go play half the Pac-12. Go play half the Big 12. I mean, you're going to get games against Illinois. You're going to get games against Purdue's kind of on their way up. So pick a bad Big Ten team, not named Nebraska at this point in time. Rutgers. But you're not going to get to sit down and play SC. You're not going to get to sit down and play Texas. You're not going to get to sit down and play Florida State, Miami, or Florida. You have no chance to prove your case. And this Central Florida team could be they could be undefeated next year. I know I'm getting way the hell ahead of myself, but they have that much offense and power coming back. Quarterback's just a sophomore. Now we'll see. So you've had a couple of good dominoes fall for Nebraska. Oregon, not interested, not pursuing. Scott Frost, not open to their position if it becomes open. And Taggart leaves for Florida State, if I know. Two, the reality of still not even sniffing the top 10, being Central Florida. Speaking of Central Florida, you're going to be bumping around on Championship Saturday. You got ball games to go to, kids to go see, holiday shopping to do, and you're like, man, I want to see how Frosty does. I want to see how Scott's going to get this thing handled. Never fear. We are excited to announce here at ESPN in Lincoln, 101.5, 1480 AM, that we have obtained the rights to the AAC Championship game Saturday. Kicks off at noon, airtime at 11:45. So if you're bumping around town and you need to see how Frosty does, and it could be, it might be, it likely is his last game at Central Florida as head coach before he makes his way up here, does he go out undefeated? Does he go out a conference champ? Do his kids go out champions? Does the pride of Wahoo, Noah Vedral, and his teammates go out AAC champions? Well, we'll have the game on for you. At noon is kickoff. Pre-game starts at 11:45, so kind of tattoo that to the forehead. If you're out and about jumping around, can also listen to ESPNLincoln.com. So excited to give you that bit of news, tell you about it. It's pretty good stuff. Dean Blevins is coming up as we'll get his thoughts on the coaching carousel, on Gundy, and the flirtation that goes on with two guys that have pretty good jobs that pay him a lot of money. Jimbo Fisher and Gundy. Why snoop around And Dean Blevins will tell us that. We'll talk some Nebraska basketball. Hope to see you out at PBA tonight, headed down there. Excited about that. And we'll know a lot more about Nebraska basketball as you have a team in Nebraska that you see the pieces, you see the talent, you see the athleticism, and then you see really good basketball or you see horrific basketball. Can you have some happy medium, less horrific, more great? And how do they adjust without Roby tonight? So that's on the table today. Dean Blevins coming up. We'll run down Brad Edwards, get his thoughts on the college football playoff. Wisconsin looking good. Do they still have some love? I know they're number four, but if Wisconsin was in another league, would they be in number four? The Big Ten helps them out. There's not a lot of faith in Wisconsin outside of Badger land. I don't think they're getting the respect they deserve. And they're a really good football team. If you've noticed a different soybean sign in your neighbor's fields this year, that's right, it's AgriGold. Our customers now have access to select soybean varieties direct from the farm, the AgriGold way. High expectation and high seed yield goes into the ground, and the approach with AgriGold to soybeans no different. Performance soybeans from the brand you know. For more information, visit AgriGold.com, 800-262-7333. Dean Blevins up next on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Let's get caught up with News 9 and sports director and, well, amazing sports personality and sports animal radio. Dean Blevins back with us again, author of Sooner Magic, at Dean Blevins on Twitter. Dean, been a busy one for you, man. How are you?
Oh, things are good. Things are good. And I'm feeling good about what's happening up in Lincoln. So things are good down here, though. Everything except the Thunder.
Yeah, my boy's been a little upset about that. He hasn't asked me much about the Thunder, but still plenty of time.
Well, yeah, hope so.
I wanted to get your thoughts. You're in the thick of it in Oklahoma, and I know you're all over the Sooners, but you know the Cowboys and you know Gundy as well. And what's your reaction to the meeting yesterday? And the time to listen to Tennessee that, by the way, still hasn't filled their head coaching job. And what's your take on Gundy taking the time to listen?
I'm really disappointed, frankly. Mike is not leaving Oklahoma State. I mean, if the Dallas Cowboys came in and offered him the job, he would go there. And in fact, this summer at the Big 12 Media Days, I asked him because he had just signed a high-dollar extension and he had patched things up as best he could with athletic director Mike Holder and with team owner Boone Pickens, and things seemed to be in a really good spot for him, and I think they were, and I think that's one of the reasons you've seen him kind of be loosier and goosier than ever at press conferences. I don't know how much you've taken notice up there, but he's kind of been his own personality. But the point is, he's done this before, Chris. I mean, last year, Baylor. The year before, Texas. The year before, Arkansas. The year before, Tennessee. This year, not only talking to Tennessee, but Florida. Even Pat Jones is saying he was offered the Florida job, and with all due respect to my friend, how in the world would you turn down the Florida job and then be interested in taking the Tennessee job? It made no sense. I think what happens every year, and I'm not alone. I mean, this is what the money people at OSU think, and what most fans believe, is that he doesn't beat Oklahoma. I think he's 2-11. And this year, in fact, lost three games at home. And so every year, it basically is, all right, these guys better appreciate me. I'm going to go off and talk to these other schools and basically threaten to leave, and that will make them appreciate me. And that has worn really thin here.
I would think so, and he underachieved this year. Is that fair to say with the schedule he had?
Sure. Yeah. So absolutely. I mean, they're expected. In fact, they were favored over Oklahoma. This may surprise you, but they have been favored over Oklahoma the last three times they played in Stillwater. And the Sooners won all three and have won, I think, five of six up there. But, yeah, this isn't as much about Oklahoma, except that He had a Bob Stoops problem at one time, and the fans were hoping that maybe it was a Bob Stoops problem and not an OU problem, and then Lincoln Riley comes in and as an underdog goes up and beats him. But this is more about Mike wearing out the fan base with these suggestions that he might leave, and he's not leaving. He's staying at Oklahoma State, and will. And I didn't really finish my comment about this summer when I interviewed him down there. He had just signed, and everything was hunky dory. And so I said, "Hey, are you ready to say you will never coach anywhere else but Oklahoma State?" And he said, "Yeah, I'll say that I won't coach anywhere else in college. But if the Dallas Cowboy job came open, hey, I'd be crazy not to listen." So.
Well, and
there you have it.
With Gundy, I understand trying to leverage, but I don't know what he's making down there. But the report
was 4-2.
The report was $7 million. I mean, did you see that for Tennessee? What do you believe?
I think some in his camp had it as much as 8-4, which would be double. I don't necessarily believe that because I know where a lot of these annual rumors originate. And conveniently, it was double the salary, exactly. You know, if it's 8-4, you know, maybe you jump off and go. But Mike's not going anywhere. He's the most popular guy up there. He's done more for that program. Jimmy Johnson, Pat Jones, everyone since Henry P. Iba in the basketball program. So we'll see. They're gonna go down a notch because, of course, they lose – they're two superstars in Washington, the receiver, and probably more importantly, Mason Rudolph. And unlike OU and some other places that have a fallback option at quarterback, the Cowboys don't at this point. I don't know of a grad transfer out there. Unless he pulls something out of his backside, they're going to be taking a step down.
He's going to have to pull something out of his mullet. Dean Blevins with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. What do you think happens at Arkansas? I know it's not Big 12 country, but it's kind of your neck of the woods, and
yeah,
you know a lot of Arkansas alum.
I actually was born over there, and I'm raised in a Razorback fan. My brother played football there, and I was recruited by Frank to play football and Eddie Sutton to play basketball over there. So I'm thick with Arkansas. Pull for them, but you know they're in a tough situation in that conference. Frank Broyles did that many years ago, and financially it's been a boon, but competitively it's been a disaster. I don't know what they can get. You know, if I'm Arkansas, I go after Brent Venables and give him as much money as possible. I think Brent could come in similar to, not saying he could do what Bob Stoops did, but I think it's similar in the sense that he's dynamic. He's a defensive guy who would bring in offensive guys. Stoops brought in Leach and kind of started that whole deal. But I think Brent Venables could do that. But to be honest with you, I don't think – Brent told me when I was back there with him 2 years ago that he's not really looking to become a head job with the stress. Mm. He'd just take the $1 million as a defensive coordinator. Now, whether he would take $3 million if Arkansas offered, it's another thing, but I'm not sure that even he would take it.
Mm. Dean Blevins with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Dean, what's your reaction to OU being behind Auburn?
Oh, not that big a deal. I think the important thing for Oklahoma is to be in that 2-3 block. I think that they would prefer to not go to the Sugar Bowl and play either Auburn or Alabama in the sense of just home field advantage. Sure. Now, the Sooners went down there and thumped them pretty good in the bowl game, but Auburn had a pitiful night at quarterback, and this kid is a Big 12 quarterback, so they're familiar with him at Auburn now. He's a good player, so they'll be better. But I think what they would like to do is to scoot out to the West Coast, and maybe Wisconsin or some matchup like that would be favorable for them. They're going to end up, it looks like, if they win, which is no given, but it seems to me that unless some really funny things happen, they're going to end up in that 2-3 range, which is just fine with them.
Dean, what's your experience been like covering and getting to know Baker Mayfield, likely Heisman winner? That's just around the corner. What's he like?
Baker is a better guy than the perception. He goes over the edge too often. But at the core, he is an extraordinarily competitive and gifted guy. He is humorous. He gets it. He's smart. He's a fabulous leader. And one of the best college quarterbacks I've ever seen. I don't know how much of that will relate to the NFL, although I think he'll be better than most believe, and I think he'll go in the first round. But in terms of a college quarterback, what he brings with accuracy, velocity, leadership, anticipation, confidence, running ability, scrambling ability, ability to extend plays and make explosive plays is second to not many people. But as an individual, Chris, he's a really solid guy that has gone over the line too many times.
Dean, I want to get your thoughts, and I'll get you out of here on this. Dean Blevins with us, Hail Varsity Radio, News 9 down in Oklahoma City, sports director, sports animal radio, all over the Sooners, the Cowboys, and, of course, Thunder. Let's talk A&M, and I know they're SEC country, but it's not that far removed from covering and seeing A&M. Would you leave Florida State for the Aggies? And that sounds like is what may happen with Jimbo Fisher. And I don't know Jimbo at all, but you've been around some big dogs a long time.
I know Jimbo.
Yeah, I thought you did.
I've been around.
Do you think he does?
Well, I think he's about to leave. I think it's kind of worn thin over there with them. I mean, he is kind of flirted every year with someone else. Jimbo is a guy that, I mean, I don't know that I kind of look at him like, I don't know, you've probably known coaches and people who are dynamite early, but the longer you get to know them, their act wears on you at some point, and it's time to move on. I kind of put him in that category. And I think that he's worn the wrong people slick over there, and he knows it. He's got a son that has a health problem that they really are wonderful at taking care of him, and in Tallahassee there, which is an issue that most people don't consider. But I think he probably makes this move and goes to Texas A&M, where they can write checks unlimited and have $100,000 there every week and probably support him a little more than he thinks. But at the same time, Chris, he's jumping in there with Auburn and Alabama and that bunch every week. I think, to answer your question, though, unless his son's situation makes the decision for him, I think he leaves.
Dean Blevins with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Dean, about 30 seconds here. Give me a thought on the Big 12 title game.
Well, Oklahoma is decidedly better at quarterback, and I think that's what ultimately will decide the game. But Gary Patterson's been talking it up down in Fort Worth. He has his guys riled up for the smallest little petty things, but that's Gary, and I give him credit for getting his bunch rallied and ready to go. They now believe, Herbie, that they have a shot to make it into the Final Four if they can upset Oklahoma, so they will bring it. But Oklahoma's pretty healthy right now, and Lincoln Riley and Baker Mayfield are as deadly a 1-2 combination as you'll really ever see in the college game. And even though they don't have the Mixon names and the Westbrook names, they've got some awfully talented skill position players, so I think they'll be able to post a big number up there. And if Mike Stoops can hold them under 40 points, I think the Sooners are able to advance.
I think you're right on. Dean Blevins, at Dean Blevins on Twitter. Find him, follow him, and all sorts of info for you down out of the Big 12. Dean, you be good. We'll talk soon, bud.
I will. Go get them, Scott Frost. Go get them, Huskers. Still pulling for you. Go get them.
Dean's countdown to when Sooner Magic comes back to Lincoln in about 3 years. Good stuff from Dean Blevins on Gundy, on Jimbo, the coaching carousel, Mike Shuhart. Shuey is on the way. Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment, Brad Edwards on the way. Jake Milheisen up, Husker Basketball, plenty to come.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Great to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big thanks to Dean Blevins. Sports Animal, News 9, Oklahoma City. He's all over the coaching carousel when it comes to Jimbo Fisher. The mullet in Gundy. I don't know if the mullet ordered a salad or not yesterday when they met in Tennessee, but why keep flirting around other than you can? Brad Edwards is coming up. Jake Milhuizen getting you ready for Husker basketball. It's Wilderness Ridge Golf time with Mike Shewhart, wildernessridgegolf.com. Shuey, how are you?
I'm good.
Now, we need to do a quick Tennessee update because you're wearing that that orange.
Yeah.
But it's nice looking. It's a Wilderness Ridge zip up. It's a one quarter zip. I like it. We have a Tennessee coaching update. Hold on. Maybe. Okay. Tennessee has offered Johnny Fever. And the 23-year-old intern, now producer, looks at me like, who is Johnny Fever? I'm kidding. We're going to do this periodically. Just because I like listening to Rocky Top. Good fight song.
Yeah.
How's Tennessee's golf program?
Pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
They're up there.
Okay. Okay.
I know a couple years, last year. They had two sisters on the women's team. That mm-hmm. were, both of them are really good.
Yeah.
So they're always competitive.
Okay. Very. Shuey, I want to be more comfortable here. Relax.
All right.
Are you fired up at college football playoff numbers?
Always.
Yeah? I mean, you tune in. You lock in at six.
Yeah.
What about the Shuey rankings? Who's number one through four?
That's kind of what I thought.
You think so?
Yeah. I didn't think Auburn would jump all the way to number two, but I figured they'd get into the top four.
Mm-hmm.
But pretty close. That's what I thought.
Okay. So, Central Florida, man, they moved up a whole whopping one.
Yeah, that's pretty.
South Florida's a good football team they just beat.
Yeah. You got an undefeated team.
Mm-hmm.
And they get no love whatsoever, man.
No.
It's like they move them up one spot. One. It's like, man, it's like, I don't understand. I've watched them play, and I mean, they're good. They're fun to watch.
A lot of folks have watched them play.
Yeah. I mean, they score some points.
You'll be able to hear them here at noon in Lincoln on ESPN FM 101.5 and 1480 AM, part of Championship Saturday. So excited about that. So, Shuey, what's your week been like? Tell me what's going on at Wilderness. I know, man, it sounded like there was just so much fun to be had for the Thanksgiving Day special that was going on. And man, the golf and the options for golf this last weekend, crazy. Holiday weekend, was incredible.
That was crazy. I mean, I went out for Thanksgiving Day, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
I had a great time. Ate too much like everybody does.
Oh.
But the weather, man, it was just beautiful. I mean, the next day, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, that whole weekend. So we were very busy. We had a lot of people out playing golf, which is this time of the year, man. That's like bonus golf.
Oh, it's completely bonus golf.
You'll love it.
What do you, let's talk tech for a second before we get to Tiger.
Yeah,
okay?
Of course.
What are some new items that are floating out there that maybe pique your attention? Because from an equipment standpoint, that's something you're always kind of honed in on. And you're a guy who designed your own putter.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts here to start, since holiday season's around the corner. Obviously, Wilderness has plenty of options for clubs and fittings.
Good.
And grippings and items like that. A Black Friday special going on as well last Black Friday. So, you know, what's kind of on your radar?
Titleist. Titleist introduced their new irons.
Tell me about it.
So they have AP1s, AP2s, which are their typical, you know, brands that they've had for a long time. Done some redesigning of the AP1s especially, but they introduced this year an AP3, and it's a home run. It's really good. All the testing that I've done and seen, and the guys, the usage of them, a lot of positive feedback, and I've already fit a few sets of those, and guys are loving them, you know. So
what makes them an incredible investment? And I know that the look good, play good type mentality, but mm-hmm. you have the sticks that fit and feel good. I assume that. But what, from a tech, maybe you can break it down to a guy that maybe might be on the fence about spending it to upgrade.
Yeah.
It's going to help your game, right?
It does. I mean, technology is just that.
It's a beautiful thing.
It is, man. It does help immensely. So it's a great combination of a players club, which is a very good golfer. What he likes to look at, you know, he likes to look of a thin club, thin top line is what it's called. Not a lot of bulk down there, but it has the playing characteristics of a club that's a player enhancement club, you know. So it blends the both of best worlds, you know. Guys that are really good players love to look at it, but it off-center shots and things like that, man, it helps.
Correct those, huh?
Yeah, it does. It helps you hit a better shot, you know. So it's like it's just the best of both worlds. And it looks awesome.
Yeah.
And it does.
Your favorite hybrid club, because that's the club I love hitting the best. That's probably what I hit the best.
I'm a Titleist guy, you know. The products that they're putting out there are some of the best they've ever put out there from look, technology-wise.
Sure.
You know, that's another – that was introduced last year. But very good, incredibly good, you know. So I'm a little partial to that.
That's fine. That's good.
TaylorMade's another good, very good product. They put out some really good stuff, very popular stuff on the market. And then Callaway, their new driver that they had out last year, which was – extremely popular by a lot of players. And then Ping's another one. I mean, they all. And that's the beautiful part about the club and the technology is that they're always improving technology, always putting new technology out there. And does it help? No question. It does. I mean, that's what it's designed for. You know, Ping has a new driver out, G400, I think is what it's called. And got a couple of guys that I work with that have purchased that, and I've seen a lot of really good positive results because of that and because of that club.
We're going to switch gears and get into a question that's out there. Senior writer with ESPN, Bob Herrig, has asked this question. I want to get your take on it. So why do we still care about Tiger? It's the title of his new column that's out. And let's go there because, I mean, Tiger's been wowing some of his peers.
Yeah.
And that's awesome. And we're all waiting for him to come back, whether you have stood by him or not with the off the field shenanigans. The guy is must see on TV, and he's captivated and brought a lot of people to the sport the last 20, 25 years. And I love watching him just because of his bar is title or bust.
Yeah.
And that is so, that's so awesome.
Yeah.
And it's so unachievable. Think about that, Chewy, and we'll get your take on why the world still cares about Tiger. It's going to be it's a good read on ESPN.com. It's a Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Go see Chewy. Get some time locked in this fall and winter for lessons to keep locked in for your game, and see Shuey when it comes to maybe upgrading some of your equipment at Wilderness Ridge. A quick timeout will wind down hour one with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, Brad Edwards, College Football Playoff ESPN Insider, again on Willie Taggart in Oregon. Oregon, a new deal out there. We're north of $20 million over 5 years. Taggart scheduled to make $2.9 million this year, so a substantial raise to stay at Oregon. Will he do it, or does he go to Florida State? That is, if Jimbo heads to A&M, and Dean Blevins told you to start off the show that there's some health concerns with Jimbo's son as to what would be the holdup with him leaving Florida State. So Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Mike Shuhart is in. Shuey joins us. WildernessRidgeGolf.com can log on. And I hope you enjoyed the Thanksgiving special. Don't forget December 17th, a chance to go see Santa. If you got little ones or grandkids, or maybe your wife still likes to see Santa. I know my wife goes and sees Santa every year. And it's just part of the deal.
Yeah.
Feeds the reindeer.
That's right.
She loves animals.
Yeah.
There you go. Shuey, you got Tiger, and you had Tiger and Trump and DJ and Faxton all chatting a bit here. And tell me a little bit here about what you've seen from Tiger so far. And I know we talk about him each week, but, you know, he's in the news, and you've got some barbs being thrown by Justin Thomas as well.
Yeah. It's going to be pretty fun, you know. That if you watch the Golf Channel all week, man, it's been Tiger all week getting everybody primed up for Tiger's return, you know. And it's like you kind of know why you kind of want to watch Tiger, because if you've been watching what all the tournaments Tiger had played, and it's like that dude was really good and what he could do. And I think you got both sides. You got people wanting to watch, you know, to see Tiger where he's at, want him to do well, and you got other ones wanting them to fail. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just kind of the situation he's kind of put himself in, you know. But man, Tiger is one of the most iconic golfers to ever play the game of golf, you know, and he's back now playing again, and it's like who doesn't want to see the icon of the sport, you know? He's just that good, and he was that good, and he's that iconic that you like to watch. You know, again, watching some of the replays, they had like Jack in his final days of playing, you know, and he wanted the British Open to be, and it's like, you know, he went out there and played, and it's just the interest that people had in who Jack Nicklaus was, and it might be the last time you ever see Jack play. So, you know, Tiger's in that same stratosphere of the greats.
Is there a guy that you have enjoyed watching, even as a pro? And I mean, is there a peer that you, man, this guy was cool?
I was
loved this game.
I was a big Nick Faldo fan.
Okay,
you know, because he was kind of like me in a little bit. How he thought, he was very much a tactitioner. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of mechanical about how he went about his business. You know, and it was really fun to watch him dissect a golf course in his practice, how he swung, the things that he did. So I was a huge, huge Faldo fan.
That's good.
So, yeah, he was fun to watch.
Joey, folks can come see you out at Wilderness Ridge if they want to kind of brush up. Maybe you got a holiday tournament. You're going to go play with some friends down in warmer areas. You need to get that
rust off.
That rust knocked off, absolutely. WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 434 is where you can dial up, 434-5106. Should we hang out? We got Brad Edwards hanging in. College Football Insider, ESPN Insider. Jake Mielheisen is going to come up here about 5:25. His son's on Nebraska, Boston College, ACC Big Ten showdown tonight. At a tough stretch for Nebraska heading into December. Hour 2 of Hail Varsity continues.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Great to have you back, Hour 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Brad in Chicago, Danny Burke, and Mike Shuhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf and Husker Golf, hanging out in studio. Welcome in with ESPN College Football Insider and College Football Game Day. Brad Edwards with us as every Monday at 5 at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, we're getting down to it, man. What a great season of college football it's been. There's chaos in the rear view and perhaps some in front of us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I think we have more chaos in the coaching searches around the country than we do on the field. I've never seen anything like this, especially in Knoxville.
No, and in Knoxville, Nebraska fans can relate to the how bad and how incompetent this looks to when Steve Peterson got rid of Solich. And Nebraska went 40-some days until they found Bill Callahan after being turned down by people. Let's start with the coaching stuff, and we'll get to the playoff. But you're locked in and plugged into the SEC. What have you been hearing about how and why this went down with Curry? And is it a situation where Tennessee's got to make a move on him to get a next head coach because guys don't want to come work for him or don't trust him?
Yeah, it sounds like that's the direction it's going. Whether you don't trust him or not. It's more a case of, you know, is their board of trustees or whoever, you know, he technically works for, are they going to force him out? And, you know, I wouldn't want to be the head coach not knowing who I'm going to be immediately reporting to. And so at this point, I'd kind of hold off, because that's the hottest rumor out there, is that he's not going to survive this. So why would you want to take a job from a lame duck AD and, you know, have a new one hired who didn't hire you, and you're basically starting at the same time as that person? And I certainly think your leash is a lot shorter in that situation when you're starting off working for a guy who didn't hire you in the first place. So, yeah, that's just one more reason for people to want to stay away from Tennessee. Of course, another very good one is that the fan base is obviously bonkers, and the expectations are too high. I mean, the one good reason to take the job, though, is that at this point, they have so little leverage, Tennessee does. They're so desperate at this point to get a head coach that you might be able to command, you know, twice what you're making at your current school in order to get the job. I mean, I think they've now turned to Dave Doran, the NC State coach, and NC State was actually really, really close to firing him exactly 1 year ago. I think if he had lost the North Carolina game at the end of the season, he would have been gone. He won that game. I think they kind of reluctantly gave him one more shot, and he turned in a pretty good year this year. Now Tennessee's going after him. And the way things are in Knoxville, they might have to offer him $5.5 million a year just to get him to take the job so they don't get embarrassed again.
Well, and they had seven on the table for Gundy and his mullet yesterday. So, I mean, it was...
Well, the mullet's worth at least four by itself.
It is, and it, you know what? You don't have to cut it. I mean, it just fits in some areas all around the country. It travels well, doesn't it?
Yeah, they call it the Tennessee Waterfall, I believe. That's one of the nicknames for the hairdo.
There he is, Brad Edwards with his Hail Varsity Radio and the Tennessee Waterfall. Jimbo Fisher, A&M, Florida State, what do you believe happens?
You know, at this point, I think Jimbo is better off leaving, because this is the third year in a row that he's really flirted with an SEC team. And at what point do not only the administrators you work for and report to, but your players start to give up on you and question your allegiance to them? And so I think he has to go at this point. I just don't know how many times you can do this and come back and everyone continues to take you seriously. So, I think he'll probably leave. A&M seems willing to back up the truck for him. I don't completely get it. Jimbo definitely is a good coach. He's won a national title. I don't think anybody would dispute that. But why he's treated by so many people as an elite coach, I don't understand. People act as if he's one of the two or three best coaches in the game and that you're just kind of guaranteeing success by getting him. I look at a guy who's been at Florida State for eight seasons now, and if you buy into recruiting rankings, he has had as much talent as Alabama and Ohio State. And yet, only twice has he been a contender for the national title. Both of them were seasons where the number one overall pick in the draft, Jameis Winston, was his quarterback. When he has not had Jameis Winston, his teams have failed to meet expectations every year. And how that makes you a really good coach, I don't know. It would scare me to death if he was considering my school. Certainly, you could do a lot worse. I will reiterate that. Mm-hmm. But is he someone that I think people should be offering $7 million to? I don't see it.
Tea leaves say what to you about Scott Frost in Nebraska?
Well, this process of elimination at this point, you know, would kind of suggest that that's his best option. I mean, what else is out there that you've even heard his name associated with that would have a bigger upside and has more resources than Nebraska? I mean, sure, A&M is still unfilled, but I've not heard anyone mention Frost's name with that job.
What about Oregon?
Like, would have turned it down. So the Oregon one is interesting. Now, obviously, they're making a play right now to lock in Taggart for longer in the event that Florida State opens up, which I think would quell that concern for Nebraska fans. That one's tough for me because Oregon, as well as they did when he was there, I don't know that they have a lot of built-in advantages. And, you know, when you consider that USC is now back off of probation, you know, removed from its scholarship sanctions, which they were under for most of Oregon's heyday, you now have Chip Kelly at UCLA. I know there's a lot of money still at Oregon, but I don't know that it's the slam dunk that it was just a few years ago. So there's a risk. There's a risk in taking the Oregon job. And plus, David Shaw, Chris Peterson, those are great coaches that you're having to deal with every year in the Pac-12 North. I think I'd rather, you know, come be a part of the Big Ten West, and especially when you consider the alma mater, the family dynamics, and obviously if Tom Osborne were to place a call, I think that would be tough to say no to.
Well, and just you had some things kind of happen. You have this situation at Oregon where they're going to try and keep Taggart, and if they don't get Taggart, you have footballscoop.com saying that they're not considering Frost. They don't say why, other than you can infer that things are done at Nebraska. There's no announcement. Frost wasn't really wanting to talk too much about Nebraska, as you can understand, Monday at his press conference, but was asked yeah. about it and didn't say, I'm staying in Central Florida. So the haze on its way to the barn is kind of what we feel. And that's just, and then, you know, the Florida getting Mullen, that's also, I mean, all these dominoes are falling, and it looks like it's set up and ready to go for Nebraska with Scott Frost. I want to talk about Central Florida for a second. Brad, with the eye test, and they moved up a whopping one spot in the college football playoff ranking. How do you think Central Florida could fare against some of the teams in the top 10, and does not getting that game against Georgia Tech hurt them?
It might cost them a spot or two in the rankings, but it wouldn't change anything. I mean, they'd still be way out of the top
sure.
four, and they'd still be in the same position they are now, which is just, you know, win one more game and you're in a New Year's Six game
sure.
Playing against a Power Five team. And that I think, was the reality before the season ever began. You know, when you get these group of five teams that go on this run for the first time, they don't seem to have the perspective that everyone else has from having followed it year after year, which is that this is going to be a near impossibility for any of those schools to ever get serious consideration for the playoff. I think maybe the school that had the greatest chance any of them will ever have was Houston last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beating Oklahoma in the season opener, and then not only having Louisville with Lamar Jackson on the remaining schedule, but having it in November, you know, middle of November, where you have a chance to kind of break that string of conference games where people aren't paying attention to you, get another big win, put you in the spotlight. You know, that worked out perfectly, and they won both of those games. Their problem was they didn't go undefeated in conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't see the possibility of other teams having the same opportunity that Houston did last year in terms of being able to schedule several years out and kind of luck into getting two top 10 caliber teams in a season where you're actually good enough to have a chance to beat them. It's just the odds against it are incredible. And then obviously not only do you have to win those games, but you got to win all your conference wins. So I think it's hopeless if you're a group of five team to think that you can get into the playoff. As far as how they would do, I mean, look, they could win a New Year's Six game against a team that doesn't want to be there as much as they do. I think they're a very good offensive team. You look at the points they're giving up game by game in the American, and that tells me that any top 10 team that's good on offense would probably put up a really big number if they played them in a game that mattered to both teams.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a good team. I don't think there's any way that they could beat like one of the current top eight if they played them at a time when it really mattered for the other team.
Brad, a thought here on Alabama, and is Bama dead? And two, does a does a two-loss Ohio State team find its way in if there's other two-loss conference champions? I've got about 4 minutes here in this segment. I wanted your take first on if Bama's dead, and then where's Ohio State stand?
Yeah, I think they're tied together because I don't think Alabama has any shot unless either Wisconsin or Oklahoma loses. Now, I think the better scenario for Alabama is Oklahoma losing because I'm not sure that TCU can go from 11 all the way into the top four. I think TCU would have a hard time getting past Alabama. And Ohio State, which is certainly a threat to pass Alabama, there's a new wrinkle thrown into it if now you're comparing Ohio State to Oklahoma, who beat them at their place by 15, and they would both have two losses. I think a lot of committee members would have a difficult time putting the Buckeyes ahead of the Sooners. So I think that's Alabama's best shot. Obviously, that's their better shot. Their best shot is for them both to lose. You know, Oklahoma and Wisconsin both go down. In fact, someone even mentioned to me today, what if the top four all lost and none of them made the playoff? That would be fascinating. That's your ultimate chaos scenario, and I have no idea what would happen then. But I do feel pretty sure that both Georgia and Miami would be in at that point. And Alabama and whoever the fourth one would be, I don't know. For Ohio State, if you listen to Kirby Hocutt after the rankings were released last night, you got the impression, he didn't say it definitively, but you got the impression, kind of reading between the lines, that he believes that the conference championship would make the difference between them and Alabama if that's what it comes down to. So if the only lower-ranked team to win on Saturday is Ohio State beating Wisconsin, then my gut feeling is that the Buckeyes get in, Alabama is left out. The one thing, though, that I would add to this is that when it comes time to make that final vote, the committee will already know who their 1, 2, and 3 seeds are when they decide on 4. So they will be aware, if Clemson is the number one seed, that you're choosing Clemson's opponent. And I don't know how it could not be in the back of your mind that you put Ohio State against Clemson last year and they lost 31-0. Ohio State has already lost by 31 to Iowa this year. They could certainly get blown out by Clemson again. And your other choice is Alabama, who 2 years in a row has played a fantastic game against Clemson. And that stuff is not supposed to matter, but I can see how that might make it difficult for some committee members to pull the trigger on Ohio State and put them on that 4 line. So I don't know that Alabama is necessarily out of it, even though it kind of feels that way if you listen to what Kirby Hocutt said last night.
You know, and I'm just wondering if there's a scenario where you get Auburn and you get Alabama in and Ohio State is out. If is there a way to SEC? I got about a minute here. Is there a way to?
Yeah, oh, that would be the scenario. Look, if the only lower-ranked team to win is Ohio State, it's going to come down to the final spot is a choice between Alabama and the Buckeyes. And that's what the committee would be looking at, is if they take Alabama, not only are you going to have two SEC teams, you're going to have three Southern teams, assuming that Clemson wins the ACC, which they're not supposed to care about the ratings. That's not the committee's job. But from an ESPN standpoint, I can tell you that's a ratings disaster to have a one guaranteed semifinal. And by the way, Oklahoma is pretty much a Southern team, too. They're not Southeastern, but they're Southern. And that's a ratings disaster to have those matchups and the possibility that you could have two SEC teams going against each other in the national title game. No network would want to see that.
Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Insider College Game Day at J. Brad Edwards. Brad, we'll talk next week, and it'll all be figured out. Thanks so much for the time today.
Can't wait. It should be a fun Saturday.
It'll be awesome. Take care of yourself. Thank you.
You too.
All right, there he is, the old Tennessee waterfall. Gundy's Mullet. It's got its own name. Jake Mielheisen and Husker Basketball next.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We'll have another Tennessee football update before we are done. I know you're all interested. Let's talk Nebraska basketball, ACC Big Ten Challenge. back from Florida where he was doing color analysis work and doing it damn well. Jake Mielheisen, Husker standout, the pride of Lincoln Southeast with us. Jake, great to speak with you again. How are you?
Good, Chris. How are you, man?
We're good. A lot of football today, but excited about basketball tonight. And, man, what's your thoughts here as you had a chance to see Nebraska for three games in tournament action? I had a chance to watch them most of the first half against Long Beach, and I was like, wow, this team looks awesome. This team looks athletic. There was some tempo. There were some points off defense, and then the second half happened. How good do you feel about the team? They enter in a really tough stretch starting tonight.
Yeah, really tough stretch, but I like our team, Chris. I think the main thing that we have to do is just come out and control what we can control, and that's playing hard because you can kind of see – I'm not sure if you caught the Central Florida game, but we didn't make a lot of shots in the first half, and that kind of impacted how hard we played on defense. So when we were playing well, like you said, that first half of the Long Beach State game, we played really hard on defense, rebounded the ball well, and got out in transition. I think that's where this team's best is getting out in the open floor and making plays for each other. They had in the Marist game, they had 23 assists for like 30 field goals or something like that, so they're sharing the ball well. But that was basically a lot of out of transition, so I like this team a lot. They're athletic, they're long, and they're a lot of fun to watch.
Jake Mielheisen's with us, Hale Varsity Radio. A few minutes here with him on tonight against Boston College and Nebraska's strength. So you got Sparty coming up Sunday, then the Fighting Patinos Tuesday, Creighton, and then KU. I mean, this is a really good December into January setup for Nebraska, at least the names and the opportunity. When you look at the personality and the chemistry of this team, do you feel like, and again, not to overreact to it, but through your three games, is the chemistry with this team, with this group, better than in years past, in your opinion?
I think so. I mean, I think you see guys on the bench cheering for one another. I think you see guys willing to play different positions and not really caring if they score or not. And you see, when Isaac Copeland gets it going, you know, Roby doesn't come in right away, and Roby can play pretty much any position, but he just wants to come in and help the team. And I think that's what a lot of the guys are wanting to do. And even you see a guy like Anton Gill shoot the ball as well as he did in Florida. You see all the guys on the bench, they're extremely happy for him just because of what he went through last year with his injury and just how they share the ball. I think they ended the last two games with 23, 24 assists apiece. So the chemistry is good if you're seeing that type of assist each game. And if you have bad chemistry, they're not going to share the ball. So I think the guys are playing for one another and just playing hard.
That's a great sign. And what's Glenn's ceiling this year, and what type of role is going to help him thrive? Him handling the ball, is that – I know that's what's going to happen, but is that his best strength right now? Or have you seen enough improvement with him handling the ball and kind of being able to make that step, not just scoring but facilitating? Can he do both and do it well this year?
I think so. I think Glenn is the guy – you know, that makes this team go. And there are some times where he kind of stops being aggressive. And I think that's what can hurt the team. He needs to be aggressive at all times. And it doesn't mean that he's scoring all the time, but when he's aggressive and putting pressure on the defense, he can make plays for himself, and then he can make plays for his teammates. And then also on the defensive end, when he's aggressive, he can make a lot of things happen defensively, getting steals and getting out in transition. So I think he's the guy that makes his team go, but he can't be passive. He's got to be aggressive all the time, but not just shooting the ball, but just sharing the ball and being that guy for the team.
Is that hard for him with his personality?
I think so. You know, and he's a laid back guy, and he's, you know, it's not, he doesn't have to come and shoot every time, but he needs to just put pressure on the defense because he's so good at getting the paint. But he's such a laid back guy where, you know, you'll see a 5-minute stretch where he scores 12 points, you know, has a couple assists, and then all of a sudden you don't see him for 5 more minutes. And I don't know if he's just, you know, he sometimes just blends in a little too much, but he needs to be aggressive all the time for us.
When you look at a guy like Roby and Gill, and both guys just tremendous options from a bench standpoint. You look at the athleticism from Roby and the pedigree Gill came from. I mean, is this as deep a team as you're seeing around the Big Ten right now when it comes to not just 1-5, but 1-7, 1-8, 1-9? I mean, do you kind of start salivating with what could happen this year based on the players in this roster?
Oh, for sure. I think we're 8-9 guys deep for sure. And bringing in Roby and Gill off the bench, you know, they're great guys that bring a lot of energy coming off the bench because they really could be starters for us. Mm-hmm. But I think Miles likes them coming off the bench to provide a little spark. And, you know, my favorite lineup is when you have Glenn on at the point, Anton at the two, and then you have Thomas Allen in as well, and then Copeland and Roby at the 4 and 5. I mean, Thomas Allen is that freshman that come off the bench and scored in waves. And that's my favorite lineup right now just because of the scoring capability and just the athleticism they all bring.
And that's the thing here. From a versatility standpoint, you can go about five different ways. And what lineup could be really deadly but still a work in progress right now? What combination are you wanting to see pop? You just mentioned one. Is there another option out there for Miles?
Yeah, I like the one I just mentioned, but you know, you like to, you know, if we're playing a big team, you know, like we're going to face in Michigan State, that, you know, they have size down low. You know, you're going to have to play Jordy and Isaac together, and maybe Isaiah at the three. James Palmer can guard a lot of people, but we have so many combinations that we can throw out there. But I just like that combination that I mentioned, just because of the scoring mm-hmm. that we can do, and they're so good in transition. But you know, you can go really big and go Roby at the three, Copeland at the four, Jordy at the five, and go James Palmer at the two, and Glenn Watson at the one, and go huge. And you know, I think you're going to see a lot more defensively, both pressuring out there with our length and also playing some more zone, because that lineup I just mentioned that's really long and big could be a handful playing in the zone.
Hey, Jake. Danny Burke here. So, speaking of the big guys on the team, with Shimanga and OKK, don't you think it's going to be very crucial for the Huskers to get them going, especially against these bigger teams in Creighton, Kansas, Michigan State? Because as long as I've been watching the Huskers, they seem like a perimeter team going for the threes a lot. Isn't it a pretty big aspect for them to utilize their big men coming up against these bigger players?
Absolutely. I think they need to utilize both the big guys and just the guards getting inside and playing inside out to start games, because, like you said, Danny, we've sometimes settled early on, kind of like we did against Central Florida when they had Tucko fall down low. We settled for threes and outside shots early, and we weren't making them. So we need to establish the paint, whether it be the big guys or us getting in there with our guards. But Jordy's going to be – Jordy and probably Roby and Copeland are going to be our main post-up guys. No offense to Doobie, but – you know, he's not going to be a major post-up presence down low. He's mainly in there for, you know, rebounding, defense, and just kind of blocking shots. But we need to get Jordy going down. He showed some pretty good moves in the latter games, but he's going to be our main back-to-the-basket post presence. But I like Roby down low. With his injury, he's going to kind of hurt us a little bit. He's just so versatile down low where he can post you up, but then he can face up, back you down, depending on who's guarding him.
Jake, got about 3 minutes here. Jake Mealhausen with us, Hale Varsity Radio, former Husker standout. He's done work covering Nebraska, obviously, with the network, and at Jake Mule on Twitter. Jake, do you worry about this team's ability to execute in the half court? I mean, the droughts have also kind of risen their ugly head, the scoring droughts. And I've seen great ball movement, but I've seen the offense look its best, obviously, off a transition, off a turnover, or off of a stop when they can get out and get out with a better tempo. If they got to go slow, can they be effective?
I think they can be. They've shown the ability to score in the half court, but obviously a transition's been their best. Yep. And they've also, like you said, the droughts have come about when they've been forced to score in the half court. So I guarantee that Miles and staff have been working with those guys to get some quick hitters, maybe get some box sets in there. But you know, Miles likes to play a lot of the motion continuity offense, and I think we had the players to do it. And I think the earlier games, you know, like at St. John's when we lost, and even the Central Florida game, we you know, we were tight. And, you know, we kind of have a veteran inexperienced group with Palmer sat out, Gill sat out, Copeland sat out. And I think they were all pretty nervous early on in the season. So I think as you see the season kind of go along, they'll get more comfortable in that continuity and be able to score in the half court.
Jake, we'll get you out of here on this. Thanks so much, man. We'll catch up with you again. Love your insight and your thoughts on Nebraska basketball. What happens tonight? Does Nebraska get the win? We know they need to have the win against BC, but how's it get done tonight?
I think they will. I don't know a whole lot about Boston College, but you know, I read somewhere that Boston College hasn't won a true road game since March of 15, so we don't need to break that streak tonight. But I think we win. Just if they focus on playing hard, which is kind of what they did against Marist and Long Beach State, and not worry about scoring, you know, the offense kind of comes to them. They're not thinking so dang much. So they just need to worry about what they can control, play hard on defense, because if they get out in transition and get defensive rebounds and get some steals, you know, win this ball game. But it'll come down, especially if Roby's out tonight, which I'm assuming he is with his ankle injury.
He's out.
You know, it'll come down to, you know, Copeland and Glenn Watson and Palmer playing well for us tonight.
Jake, we'll bump into you soon, brother. Thanks for the time. We'll do this again.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
See you. Take care. Jake Muehlheisen with us, Husker standout, the pride of Lincoln Southeast, at Jake Muehl on Twitter. And Jake, part of the broadcast with old Kent Pavelka, the last trip down in Florida. So Jake's up close and personal with this Nebraska team while he was filling in as a color analyst. So good to hear from Jake Muehlheisen. Big thanks to him. Brad Edwards crushed it. Just incredible thoughts on the coaching carousel. The nickname he has given Gundy's mullet, the Tennessee waterfall, although it did not travel to Tennessee full term. So you want to get caught up, you missed any part of the show, the podcast available on the ESPN Lincoln app, on iTunes, and on HaleVarsity.com. A quick timeout of Jock Doc on the way. Don't forget this holiday season, find your way to Sauter Heyman with 0% interest financing and 1-carat diamonds, $99 down, just $99 a month. 12th and O downtown, Lincoln South Point Pavilion, or on West in Grand Island.
And now,
back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hale Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday. Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert with us. Dr. Brandon, hope you had a good Thanksgiving. How are you?
Hey, I'm great, buddy. Thanksgiving was awesome. The weather was amazing.
Yeah, it was good. Did you eat enough to avoid flying through the air like Blake Griffin?
I did. Way too much. Definitely way too much. How about yourself?
That's what I did, too. I just fell asleep multiple times. You know, NBA players are such amazing athletes. The quick twitch burst in athleticism you need to have to get to the rim, to get a rebound, to jump again, to get a second rebound. It's there. And a guy who's been oft injured is Blake Griffin, and he is going to be out. MCL strain, is that correct?
Yep, that's it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Blake and what he is going through, because he's had knee issues. This is a sprain on the left knee, and kind of let's dive in to the different grade levels of spraining that MCL and kind of expand a bit, if you could, Dr. Brandon, what the MCL does for you as an NBA player. Why is it so important? Why is it so touchy?
You know, so what the MCL is anatomically, it's basically be on the inside part of your knee. It's called the medial collateral ligament. It has an attachment point on the thigh, which is the femur, and an attachment point on the shin, which is the tibia. And essentially what it does is it prevents motion to the inside. So if you think of somebody who's kind of knock-kneed, that would be what we call a valgus direction. As your knees come together, that's moving in a valgus direction. So the MCL essentially prevents movement or stabilizes movement in that direction. And so if you get a chance to watch a video, it's pretty gruesome, and obviously it's very fortunate that it's just an MCL, not something else based on what the video looked like. But essentially, that's what happened. Very common injury, not as common in basketball as it is in football. But as you basically come down and land as a basketball player, you land awkwardly, and kind of your balance kind of shifts to the outside. The knee kind of goes to the inside, but your foot is planted, and that's how that injury typically occurs in basketball. Football, it's more of a contact injury. You get hit from the side, and the knee goes in that direction and stretches the MCL.
He had a broken kneecap and had surgery 2009-2010 that kept him out for the season. This is the same knee. Is there anything related to the two? And I know we're talking 7-8 years apart, but still, you got to wonder with more trauma to that part of the body, that same area.
Yeah, that's a great question. Did he ever fully recover? We always ask that question from, the first time they get injured, did they ever fully recover from the injury? Did his quad fully recover? I would assume at that level, which with as well as he's been playing, that I would think from a muscular strength standpoint, he has fully recovered, very well from it. But when you have an injury like a patella fracture like he had, that's obviously a really difficult injury to recover from, especially at the level of the NBA and being a jumping athlete like he is. So you wonder, if there is maybe there is a little muscular imbalance. Maybe there's a little bit of some coordination issues there that he's still struggling with. And that may have led to maybe some of that kind of balance issue that kind of put him in the spot last night to have this injury.
And tell me about overcompensation. You look at Blake, and he hurt the plantar of his right big toe in game 3 against Utah a year ago, and again, that's a year ago, but I mean, this guy's got a lot of miles on him. He's had the kneecap, he's got the MCL strain now, he had the plantar issue, that big toe. He's played in 67, which means he missed 15 games 3 years ago. He missed 50 games 2 years ago. He missed the first round of the postseason last year and also another 24 games last year. So he's missing a lot of time due to ailments and injuries. Do you think that's just his body breaking down? For now, we're talking 12 to 15 years of hard competitive basketball. Is that why you can kind of point to him being so oft injured?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I think you're correct, definitely in that regard. Think about the miles that he's put on with all the basketball he's played. I think, too, when you look at some of these athletes, the type of player you are, the type of position you play, I definitely think that lends itself to other, certain types of injuries, getting more mileage. When you take somebody who's a big-time jumping athlete, you look at, he's an amazing dunker, he's an amazing jumper, and that's a big part of his game, and that's always kind of been a big part of his game. So I think when you look at those athletes, I think a lot of those athletes have quite a few injuries. I can think of one who was kind of a similar boat, would be like an Amari Stoudemire, one of those kind of rim level players that was always, jumping high flyer type, and he had a ton of knee injuries. And so I think that's definitely played a role for him. You wonder about, his long-term durability. He's such a fantastic player, but at some point, I think these injuries are really going to start to pile up for him, and this will be one that will be a little bit difficult to recover from the rest of the season.
Dr. Brandon Seifert with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, a Jock Doc Wednesday. Blake Griffin is MCL strain. I've seen a picture of this, and it's similar to getting rolled up on by a lineman, that type of bend, and it looks like the leg, the knee, at a 45, well, not quite 45, we'll say 110 degree angle, if you get the old protractor out, it just looks uncomfortable, and pretty lucky to just be 8 weeks. What's Griffin doing the next 8 weeks to get back on the court?
The biggest thing for him is initially here is, getting him into a brace, get some support over that ligament, give that a week or two to, heal up pretty well, kind of tighten up and scar back in a little bit. In addition to that, working on some range of motion, and then also trying to get that quad to wake up. That type of MCL injury is definitely going to result in quite a bit of swelling. And so you manage the swelling first, you get a little bit of range of motion going, you brace these up, it helps them heal faster, using that brace to give it the extra support. And it's just a really hard, kind of hard and fast rehab course for him. I think they're talking to maybe a 2 or 3 month course of rehab is what they're looking at. So he's probably a pretty high grade sprain. You know, this is probably in the grade 2 range, maybe even approaching a grade 3, just based on what that video looked like.
What kind of gives you the green light or not to do surgery with this?
You know, the great thing about MCLs is it's very rare you ever have to fix one, especially an isolated MCL. I think I just said MCL. I don't mean to say ACL. Definitely an MCL. So very rare you ever have to fix these. About the only time you fix these is in combination with like an ACL or another type of injury. In fact, there's actually some pretty good studies out there that show that maybe you don't ever have to fix an MCL. That is debatable when you get to grade 3 real high level ones, depending on, you know, where is the MCL tear located, and, you know, it hasn't got to the point where there's kind of a vibe. The way we kind of really make that call is, you know, has it violated kind of the space within the knee joint itself. Sometimes these MCLs will completely peel themselves off, like the meniscus layer of the knee, and then fluid starts leaking out, and that's a huge issue. But those would be ones that, you know, in my practice I would fix, but those are extremely rare. So, again, in his situation, this is not one that would need to be fixed, and usually if you get to that super high level where it needs to be fixed, something else is going to be damaged along with an ACL, terrible meniscus-type injury.
Blake Griffin, our topic, a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Brandon Seifert. Dr. Brandon, we'll get caught up again. Thanks for a few minutes today.
All right, Chris, you guys take care.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
I met with some guys and just talked to them about a guy like Jack McVay, I think, can help us. And it hasn't really, I don't think he's come out and played as aggressively as he can. I believe that Jack is going out, maybe he knows he's not getting quite the minutes he used to get, so he's more protective of what he does. We need him better than that. We need him playing more aggressively. So a guy like Jack will slide into that spot for sure, and we'll just see after that. You never know when you might throw in a wing like Nana McKenton or something like that, a bigger wing. I think Thomas Allen's getting better physically. Physically too, so I could see his minutes getting there, getting better and improving.
That is Coach Tim Miles yesterday, and that's kind of your options without Roby. The Roby effect could be large tonight against Boston College. We shall see. Great to have you back as we wind down a Wednesday on Hail Varsity Radio. Some review here on today. We hit on UCF's ceiling. A reminder, we will have Central Florida Memphis at noon here in Lincoln on ESPN FM 101.5 and 1480 AM. We'll have that broadcast for you. And we touched on a couple of last thoughts here that could seal the deal for Nebraska if it's needed to be sealed. One, the Oregon opening, you have that offer by Oregon to extend Taggart instead of him headed to Florida State. If Jimbo goes to A&M, that domino, Frost is not an option per Football Scoop for Oregon if that job comes open. We spent some time on that. So that makes you feel good if you're a Nebraska fan, and you feel great at the expense of Central Florida because they're incredible, and they moved up a whopping one spot in the college football playoff, period. End of story. You want to win titles. You want to win big games. You want to play in big, big games. Got to get out of the non-Power 5 to do it. Solidified things. So we spent plenty of time on that. Dean Blevins was incredible. All over Gundy and Jimbo Fisher has covered him and knows them both. And the emphatic statement from him, they're act-wearing thin where they're at. Period. Because it's, well, woe's me. I underachieved and you're on my backside about it. Better go start looking for somewhere else that thinks I'm pretty special. And then Brad Edwards, great with the playoff, great with thoughts on Ohio State and Bama, great with his take on Scott Frost and the Nebraska stars aligning. Brad was incredible with the name that has been given to Gundy's mullet, the Tennessee waterfall. Do we have a Tennessee update? We've been doing these periodically throughout the show. Johnny Fever has just turned down the coaching job. We said that last hour. Who else has turned down the job? And I do like this fight song. Remember the Muppet Alf? TV show Alf as a kid? Alf has said no. So they on to candidate number 76. We can keep this going. I like this. Next, Kenny Chesney will be offered. Who else is Samuel L. Jackson's from Tennessee? You could go there.
Not a bad option. Could have worse options.
They'd be tough. Danny, be good, brother. Appreciate you. We'll be back tomorrow at 4 on Hail Varsity. Jerry DiNardo is going to talk black shirts with us tomorrow. Excited about that. Gary Barnett tomorrow. Brandon Vogel. Maybe Jay Moore. Who knows?